This is the Indie Dads Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Malcolm.
And we're a couple of dads sharing our journey about bootstrapping our indie businesses while still prioritizing our young families. We believe that you can hustle and work hard to build a successful SaaS, freelancer, indie business while still being family first.
Join us as we share our learnings from building our businesses from scratch.
Well, hello, Malcolm. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. I wouldn't say fantastically well, but doing okay. How about you, Brian?
That sounds ominous. We'll have to dig into that. I'm doing pretty good. Is Halloween a thing where you are?
Not as much as what it sounds like it is in the States. So yeah, we get very few trick-or-treaters going in the streets, and I think our weather wasn't all that great, so we actually didn't get anybody knocking on our door on Sunday evening. But looking at all my social feeds, I see the general American culture is you have a lot of fun with that time of the year. How did it go with you?
That's one way to put it. We're just out of control. Everything's got to be turned up to 11. It was fun. You know, we didn't do a whole lot. The kids dressed up. We went out a little bit. Found some of the houses around here kind of go all out and put together a little haunted house kind of thing. So the kids went through that. Nice. And, you know, they got to sleep sometime. So once they do, I get to have my pick of whatever they got. So I'm a little surprised that I'm not feeling it this morning, but it was good. We had fun.
But I mean, you have like quite a range of ages for your kids. So does your oldest still get into the vibe, or is it like,
true,
I'm too old, yeah, Dad, I'm not going to do it?
Well, my older two took off with their friends, so they went off and did their own thing, which is fine by me. And then the younger three, they're more into it. So yeah, we went out, walked around a little bit. It was good. But what's new on your side? I'm really curious. It sounded like maybe you were a 6 out of 10 this week, and I'm curious what the update is.
That's actually a fair assessment, and I'm super curious about your update with the sneak peek that you gave us on Twitter. But I can go first because it sounds like your update's going to be a lot more exciting than mine. It was a tough 2 weeks. A week and a half, a bit since we last talked. Huh? So externally, we've had load shedding here in South Africa, which is basically like rolling blackouts because our state electricity provider can't keep up with the load. So what they do is they turn off the electricity like areas at a time. And during the day, that's not a problem for me because I've got a generator to do my day work. But I don't think my neighbors would appreciate me turning on my generator at midnight until like 1 in the morning. So that kind of limits my options. And I don't really, I mean, I've got a laptop that would be easy enough to work on, but I'm not quite as productive in that environment as I am with my desktop and all the screens and fast processors and everything. So that's been a bit of a disruption. But also did make, given my mental state that I was communicating last week, I decided to put a little bit more effort into spending time with friends and like explicitly getting out. And we saw a movie for the first time since I can't remember when. I don't remember what the last movie I saw at the theater was, but we went out and watched Shang-Chi, which was very good. I enjoyed that movie. Highly recommend. It's very entertaining. And then, yeah, I think this time of year is also quite difficult for us because we're going into exam time for the two oldest kids. And my middle one is not so much of an issue because he's just like whatever challenge comes his way is, you know, he just tackles it head on. He's got no fear. But our oldest has got a little bit of ADHD, so he gets extremely anxious around this time of year, and it takes a lot of mental energy to kind of help him through the thought process of tackling the studying and his whole mental state and how he how he handles this time of year. So spending a bit more time on family things as well. But yeah, we didn't not do anything. I think one thing I forgot to mention last time around was I had built a license manager part of Remote Time. So what that allows me to do for customers or potential customers is like to customize their licensing, you know, their dates. And so that's, for example, the way that I got this friend of mine that I was talking about last week about proactively going through Remote Time and getting feedback. Part of that was giving him a custom license so that he could, you know, play around with the full functionality and give feedback. So that kind of allows me to extend existing licenses or to give free licenses out, you know, as a tool when and where I need to do it. I probably over-engineered it when I first wrote the functionality. So there was a lot of encryption and thing going on there. So people can't just go into the database and change something simple like a date. But I guess the sins of past enterprise type development came back to bite me. So the license manager was a little bit more complex, but it's done now. So if it ain't broke, don't try and fix it. I try to live by that mentality.
I'm curious. So the rolling blackouts that you have that you mentioned, did those affect your freelancing at all, or is it only at night? And then the other question I had was, what'd you do instead? Did that give you an opportunity to kind of do anything else, whether it be with family or anything else?
Yeah. So we have a schedule that we work to. So it really depends on what stage of load shedding they implement, how often it happens, and how long it happens for. I think this last round has been mostly in the evenings. So I think I was only disrupted once or twice in the week. But like I mentioned, in the week, it's not a problem because I've got a generator that I just kickstart out back, and then I hook up my internet and my computer to that, and I can work just fine. But in the evenings, it's a bit limiting. So I can't put the generator on, but then it's late at night and all the family sleeping as well. So I kind of have to, it's quite interesting because technically I could go to sleep and catch up on the sleep that I'm missing, but then that really messes with my biological clock in terms of when I wake up. So I try and keep the same hours. I found that it's very important for me to be very consistent about when I go to sleep and when I wake up in order to keep my biological clock in that routine. Because things really get messed up, ironically, if I get more sleep and then it's not at exactly the same time, and then I struggle to kind of be healthy in the other spheres.
I see why you're frustrated, because it sounds like the only thing it really messed with was your side projects, your plans to make progress there. Yeah.
So look, it's at the end of the day, I think even though it is a forced break and that never feels great, any kind of a break is good just to get your mind more relaxed, and you think differently when you're a little bit more relaxed. So I was catching up on some Cowboy Bebop on Netflix and just thinking, like, at the back of my mind on there, we talked about different sprints. So this last 2 weeks was a bug fix sprint. And I guess the most concerning thing for me is like, what am I going to do in the marketing sprint? So I've got to kind of like, I've got that thought process kind of running in the back of my mind, preparing for that when I get to it. But yeah, all was not lost. I did, it was actually the experiment so far with that dedicated sprints is that it's working quite well, I think. So even though I didn't get a lot of time, I managed to work through probably 5 or 6 bugs that have been kind of bothering me. And I guess my personality is that way, is that I like to focus on one thing at a time. And no developer really likes bugs being in the software. So you're working on features and things, but you know there's this bug that you got to get to sometime. And that really kind of like pollutes your energy, I suppose. So that felt really good to get those out of the way, get those bug fixes done. And it's one of those funny things. It's like, oh, this is really simple. Let me just update this NuGet package. So there's like the equivalent of an NPM package or some third-party library that you use to develop your app. I'm like, what harm could that do? And it turned out it can do quite a lot. So I thought I'd done all the bug fixes and then released a beta version to the store so that I could test on devices, you know, in a production kind of setup. And it turned out I broke quite a few things. So I haven't quite finished with the bug fixing sprints. I'll probably be spending this evening and tomorrow just kind of finalizing that and making sure that, you know, reverting those upgrades and making sure I didn't break anything else. But yeah, it felt good to have that singular focus.
Remind me what's next.
So the next sprint, I don't think there's any surprise that I'm kind of delaying the marketing side and I'm justifying it to myself, you see, because marketing is more effective if you actually have something to talk about, which technically isn't really true, because I think the initial marketing things that I'll be doing is just spending thinking time on a more formalized strategy, like all the different distribution channels that I could be doing. And then the first like technical efforts will probably be more on a like engineering as marketing. So replacing the website for SEO and, you know, those kind of similar things. So it's not super scary just yet, but I've been meaning to get to some very, very simple analytics for the app. It's just on a high level so that you can see for, say, the month of October, how many hours per client have you billed, and, you know, whether you're above or below targets. And it's a small little thing that will offer quite a bit of value. So since the bug fix sprint is kind of bleeding into the sprint anyway, I thought it made sense to tackle something small but really valuable. And then next time we meet, we'll be like ready and have no excuses to start a marketing sprint.
Cool. Makes sense. So do you feel like, I can't remember the name that you called it, but the rolling blackouts, will those continue? Is that going to potentially hit this next sprint too?
Yeah, probably. They've turned it off, I think, from yesterday or the day before. They said, okay, well, we've halted it. And it's kind of ad hoc, because the whole problem is the national grid is under strain, and we're running these really, really old coal stations to keep the lights on. And what's happened over the last 20, 30 years is they haven't maintained these power providers, and the efforts to build new ones have just cost billions of dollars and, you know, gone into everything except for actually building them. So the problem is now is that because the maintenance wasn't done, they're super fragile. So, you know, it could be fine this week, and next week they could say, well, you've got load shedding twice a day for 2 hours at a time. So we really don't know. So I have other plans to get something a little bit more permanent. It's slightly more costly, but I think now the cost benefit is now outweighing that. So I'll probably be getting some solar panels and a battery system so that it's a little bit more seamless. And then that will help my indie hacking in the evening as well. So I don't have this super loud motorbike sounding generator bothering my neighbors at all hours of the morning. And that can get me going as well.
That's cool. Okay.
But yeah.
So do you think there's a risk of you feeling like a 6 out of 10 2 weeks from now? Or do you feel like you're kind of past that, hopefully, since they're maybe done?
Yeah, I'm optimistic. I think they're pretty much done. And just in terms of work as well, you know, working on features is always a lot more fun than working on bugs. So that's like where I get my most energy, is knowing that I've put something in the app that's going to give value to potential customers. So that's just automatically going to give me more energy. But at the same time, as I mentioned, like this is really crunch time, exams for the kids. And I think that's where most of my mental energy is going now, probably for the next 3 weeks or so. So it's very much, I think, more dependent on that rather than the load shedding, is just really managing, you know, this exam time with my oldest. So both our oldest and our youngest have ADHD, and it's we're learning as parents as how to manage that. And I think there's a very negative stigma around ADHD and the fact that the brain works differently rather than less efficiently. And unfortunately, your academic schooling system is very dogmatic towards one way of learning, and it's not very child friendly for those who are built differently. So we've kind of circumvented that early when our children were really young. We did homeschooling, and that's, you know, for kids that think differently, that works really, really well because you can super customize their learning path. But the two oldest are now in school. So, you know, just because of the whole qualifications things to give them the best chance of getting into universities or whatever, should they so choose. But that has extra challenges for us in that. So we're kind of learning, and, you know, like my oldest is 14 now. So there's all the teenage hormones and, you know, emo angst and everything that goes with that, and trying to walk that road with him. So, yeah, it's going to take a bit of energy over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I've heard it said that ADHD can even be a superpower if you learn to work with it, but I haven't been through that. So, I mean, I don't know what that involves, but it sounds very challenging.
Yeah, it's kind of a double-edged sword, I think. If from people we've spoken to, there's a period of understanding what it is, and mm-hmm. knowing where to switch that superpower on, and also knowing how to manage the deficiencies you have. Because I think one of the things is focus. Like my mm-hmm. oldest, he finds it extremely difficult to sit at the dinner table with us because he gets irritated by his sister's chewing and his brother's tapping on the table, and he just can't function with those distractions. His brain just latches onto every distraction around him. That can be a superpower if you're in a room full of people and there's four conversations happening and you're tapped into every single one of those conversations and you know what's going on. But it can also be detrimental if you're trying to concentrate and do one thing. It's walking that road of helping him, like how to use it and how to manage those distractions when they come.
Yeah. And that's where the whole, you know, everything we've been discussing about prioritizing around the family first comes in. So makes sense. You know, one thing that I was curious about, you do freelancing work during the day. I know for me, when I work during the day and try to do things on the side, how my day went directly affects my evenings and my motivation at night so much. But I haven't heard a whole lot from you about that. Are you able to really kind of separate those and compartmentalize the day work?
Yeah, pretty much. I think a lot of freelancers struggle with that. I think I'm blessed in a way as well, that I really enjoy my day job as well. We're building a product that is really purposeful for me, so I get a lot of satisfaction on working on that. And the people that I work with are, like, the whole company is full of creative people. It's because of it's musician based, and we do, I don't know, the primary product is around music, and so there's just all these super creative young people with a lot of energy. So for the most part, you know, the day works out really well. I mean, look, you do get off days and where things are frustrating, but generally I'm able to. It's quite nice in that the way that the current schedule has worked out is that I can finish my day, and normally if the weather is good enough, I kind of mark that off, and then I go for a walk with my wife, and we get time without the kids, and we can talk about things that are on our minds. Like, she would have gone through the whole day managing the children and when they should be studying and that kind of thing. So she gets to vent with me and I get to vent with her, and we kind of have some objective opinions on how we should go forward and that kind of thing. So that's really nice. And we get home and we have dinner together as a family around the table, and we have a family policy that we don't do television in the week. So that helps not to distract us. We don't always get it right, but that's what we try to do. And we try to have meals together around the table. And then when the kids go to bed, you know, 8:30, 9 in the evening, I have at least an hour and a half of dedicated time again with the wife. So that whole time of family time really helps to calm you down and to center you again before I get back to my desk. So when I'm at my desk again, I've kind of recharged already, and that helps me put in 2 or 3 hours of work.
That's awesome.
And, you know, think differently.
Yeah. And boy, it's nice.
So, yeah, that's about enough about me, Brian. How about you? You posted something very interesting on your Twitter feed. I think it was yesterday or the day before. Something about being a co-founder, something like that.
To add some context around that, you know, last week you really pushed back on me about the notion that I hadn't yet provided enough value. I was kind of test driving this partnership that I was looking into. This old friend of mine that had, he's a sales and marketing kind of guy, and he had gotten something off the ground himself and with, a VA, for example, and a friend of his helping with the back end of the books and things like that. But I wasn't sure if that's what I wanted to do full time, and I didn't expect him to say, "Hey, come on in, I'll give you 50% of my company." So,
yeah.
We'd had those conversations. I knew what was at stake roughly, but we didn't have, quote, the conversation. And I was holding off on that. I wanted to make sure that it was a good fit for me and that it was something that I could get excited about for the next several years. And then I wanted to make sure that he felt that the value was that my contribution was valuable enough to warrant, a significant partnership. So, I was working towards that, and I realized after you had pushed back, we even talked a little bit off air afterwards.
Yeah,
that I didn't have to necessarily deliver the thing that I had been talking about in order to prove the value. Just having a plan and being able to execute toward that plan was really all I needed to be able to show, hey, this is where we can go. Here's the vision. Here's step one of 10 that's been completed. The other 9 are just a matter of execution. So, I gave that some thought and, I reached out and I said, look, I'm ready to have the talk. Let's have the talk. If you are, or when you are, and he was, let's talk about it. So, we met up and you do that kind of dance where you're negotiating, but not really negotiating, and you don't want to say something and they don't want to say something. And it was kind of funny because at the very end, we both basically said the exact same thing. We had the same expectations, the same, numbers in mind, everything.
Oh, wow.
And if we had just cut to the chase, it would have been faster, but you have to go through that. So
exactly.
What we settled on is he's gotten this thing off the ground. He's got some traction. He is, he's basically limited by how much he can personally do. So he can't scale beyond himself, and I can help the company scale beyond just him. So what it ended up being was we're effectively going in 50-50. However, I like the idea of always having a tiebreaker. So we're actually doing 49-51. He's the 51. He's the CEO. He got it off the ground. I'm happy to concede that, extra 1%. We're effectively 50-50. We still make decisions together. But if it came down to a tiebreaking vote, I would defer to him, and I'm happy to do that. He's got good judgment. I think it'll be fun. So this is the thing that I want to double down on. This is the thing that I want to work on for the next several years. I've found it. I'm happy about that. Now I still do have this timeline that I'm working against. I'm still not paying myself. He's not paying himself, and I'm not paying myself either. So other than out of our own savings. So that's the next milestone that we've got to get to, is being able to pay ourselves. We can pay the basic expenses of the company, but we need to be able to pay ourselves. And basically by around March or April of next year, I would call this, a golden opportunity, but not easy. I think maybe I gave the perception that this is kind of like a slam dunk and easy thing from the tech side. It's actually not. So revenue, for example, just full transparency here, is the lowest it's ever been since the company started. And you start at zero, that's the lowest. It's gone up and it's gone down. We're losing clients sometimes and we gain clients sometimes. But right now it's, the tech side breaks constantly. There's a lot of still, duct tape and bubble gum stuff that I'm going to have to fix. that's going to be a pain. And, you know, there's only one of me, so I've got to do that plus try to build the new thing. We've got some super happy clients and some super annoyed clients. And so there's that, working on that as well. And the interesting thing to me is that, you know, the business itself is not sexy. It's lead generation for real estate investors. Like, I can see everybody's eyes just glaze over when you say that. But, you know, it boils down to a framework for just really highly efficient ads, Google ads. That's what it is for real estate investors. Yeah. But the cool thing about it is that the reason that I was drawn to it and the reason that I like it is that he's figured out basically that it's just math. There's a formula for what you need to be successful as a real estate investor. And you can get, you can fill in some of those blanks that you need, things like, you know, lead volume and average revenue per lead and all that kind of stuff. He's figured out that math model. So therefore, it's just math. And, you know, for developers like us, if it's just math, that's gold and that's perfect, because you can turn math into a machine. You know, that's both money making for us and for the clients. So that's what's exciting for me, is turning it from this thing that is, it's just math today, but it's leaky. It's like a leaky bucket all over the place, plugging those holes and then fixing that. You know, but the other fun part is, to our clients who are real estate investors, they're not tech, usually they're not tech savvy. They're not even really interested in how things work. They just know that Google ads work. And, you know, to them, it's like voodoo magic. They don't really understand it. Most of them don't want to. And so there's this interesting line that we've got to walk, where we educate them about, like, it's not just you put money in and you get leads out. You have to do these steps ABC. 1, 2, and 3. Yeah. Exactly. And so there's an education aspect to it as well, which is going to be fun. I think we can do a lot with SEO there. And the best thing about this, which is the most frustrating thing, I think, for a lot of people when they're starting out with a new company, is the backlog is very clear. I know exactly what we need to do.
That's fantastic.
Versus when you're starting out on a new project or a new product, you know what the MVP looks like probably, but after that, until you get some customers, it's really murky. It's hard. Yeah. But now that we've got some customers initially, we know what they love, we know what they hate, we know what we need to do. So now it's just a matter of prioritizing.
So can we just back up a second, this discussion that you had with your business partner? Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, feel free to say that's a bit confidential at the moment, but I'm curious as to, you came to this conclusion. So how did you set up the deal? Is there any cliff and that, what's that term when the shares vest over time, mm-hmm. vesting, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Was there any of that discussion there in terms of your shares vesting over time?
Yeah.
Because I think the one thing that people are worried about is they're going to give away like 40% of their company or whatever. And then 3 weeks later, it says, okay, well, I'm actually bored now. I'm going to go do this other thing. And then they actually mm-hmm. own like a good chunk of your company. Did that come into the discussion at all?
Definitely. And it is, as of right now, it's a handshake agreement. And we talked about those things and we have a verbal agreement on what it is. We still need to get with an attorney and have them draft up an agreement for us. But the idea is there'll be some vesting, which will be based partly on time and partly on deliverables. The vision that I've laid out, I have a pretty good idea on how, like at what points in time those can be delivered. And so I think the way that we'll do it is an amount of time, or if I can deliver the major milestones ahead of that, then that might help accelerate some of that vesting. So for example, let's just say like 10% was the first milestone. It could be either a year from now, well, I don't know, 6 months from now, or when you deliver this major chunk, and that incentivizes me to make a difference faster.
Yeah.
You know, we had an explicit discussion about that. We don't have it written down anywhere. We have enough of a history where we know we're not going to leave the other high and dry, but we do want to get it written down, because money changes things, stress changes things, you know, bad times change things. So
Yeah, so two comments there. So those milestones that you, is that revenue based, like revenue milestones, or are they like product feature milestones?
They are product feature milestones that will directly affect revenue. So for example, I think I mentioned last time that there is a site that we send all the Google ads to, and the lead gen site that collects the, you know, name, email address, physical address, and all that of people that are interested in selling their home. And the one that's up there right now is awful. And so the leads that we get are, you know, the click-through rate and the cost per lead is really high. The cost per lead's high, the click-through rate is low because the site's awful. So we are launching this week the first thing that I started on, which was and worked on during October, which is a new lead gen site. That's the thing that I tweeted out that you were referring to, that modernizes it, that should, in theory, increase the lead percentages and all that kind of stuff. We'll see, because users are weird and things might be counterintuitive. But once that's launched and we can see that it is at least meeting the previous numbers, then that's the milestone.
I think the only thing that my thoughts on there is, I think revenue is a really good one, because that is the point of the business, is to become Ramen profitable so that you guys can be paying yourselves off of it. I think if you're making room in the agreements for the fact that life happens, right? Because you can initially think feature 1, 2, and 3 is going to make a really good product, and if we've got those three features, then we're golden. But it turns out life happens and you have to pivot, and now you've got this technicality in your agreement that said you had to build feature 1, 2, and 3 in order to get your 40% or the last 20% of your equity. And then it turns out, well, you had to pivot the product, so you didn't build those features at all. So does that mean you don't get your last 20%? So that's just kind of like in the back of my mind, to be sure that you're not tying yourself to things that, you know, when life happens, that they become invalid.
That's a really good point. And I would say there's, that's a great point. And I think something that I will give some thought to. The fallback for product or feature or milestone delivery is time. So if we just don't deliver, I guess the way I think of it is we're vesting over time, but that time can be accelerated by whatever milestones we come up with. And maybe revenue is a better one than product milestones. So that's definitely something I'll give some thought to.
Cool. And then the other thing that I would encourage you to do is that I know it's a verbal agreement and there's a good trust relationship between you and your business partner. I wouldn't necessarily say get a lawyer involved. I think that's, like you say, that's something that can happen in 2 or 3 months. But I think at the very least have something in an email, something in writing that says, this is the gist of our discussion that we had over lunch the other day. Is my understanding of it correct? Like points A, B, and C, 51, 49, 3-year vesting period, you know, just to get the groundwork in writing in some form. If not for anything else, then just to reference back to it, because if you only get to the lawyering in 3 months' time, then the conversation that you had now, you know, things change with memories. Like you'll remember it one way and he'll remember it a different way. Whereas if you have something in writing that you can both like refer back to and see, it's like, look, we explicitly stated these things and you agreed, so this is, we can start off on a kind of like a common understanding of what we discussed.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no downside to it. You know, there's really not. Yeah. So absolutely.
Well, that sounds super exciting, Ryan. I kind of feel like we were playing snakes and ladders and you found that one ladder that takes you up like 4 rungs of the board, and now you get to see like the last couple of blocks.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I do feel lucky, but you know, luck is a factor of putting yourself out there and luck. I mean, luck is luck, but you increase your luck by just trying different things, talking to different people, and sometimes you get more lucky that way, and sometimes you don't. But I think that, you know, there's nothing special, I guess, what I'm getting to about what I did. it was really just good old fashioned networking and being available and having the, you know, experience, I guess, that matched what the product was that they had. The hard part is going to be what they've got now. Now that I'm part of it, is a productized service. It's basically a Google Ads agency. And so we need to turn that into a SaaS. And that's what I've got to figure out. That's what we want. Explicitly, that's what we want to do.
Yes.
You know, I know it starts with adding the knobs and the levers that, you know, clients can control and a place they can get to that there that doesn't exist today. They basically hand us money and we do it all for them. And so there's no perception of control from their part. And in order to make it fully, you know, self-service someday, more of a SaaS running on its own, we've got to start to do that. So we've got to think about how to do that. And the other thing is it's really high touch sales, as you can imagine. You know, without my business partner, we wouldn't be getting the clients we do. They don't discover us. He reaches out. He has to do a lot of that marketing. He's got to sell them. Takes multiple meetings often. You know, so there's that as well. I want to take that process and make it lower touch. It'll never be like signing up for, I don't know, whatever SaaS is out there where you don't actually talk to a person. I think that will always exist, but
yeah,
there's some things we can improve there. And then another big part of it is education. These real estate investors know that tech can help them, but they don't know how, a lot of them. So there's a lot of interesting stuff and definitely plenty to keep me busy for the next few years. So that'll be fun to be talking about, providing updates on.
Yeah. And you're saying all these things like the tech is going to be really hard and at the moment it's all high touch sales, but all I'm hearing is all the potential that is yet to be realized, which is, it makes me excited for your part. You know, if there is some revenue and it's bubblegum and sticky tape holding everything together, that just tells me there's so much potential for improvement.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really cool. That's an exciting space to be in.
Yeah, it'll be fun. So as far as what's next for me, near term, you know, long term, it's turning it into more of a SaaS and putting more of the control in the hands of the actual clients, instead of being more like an agency that we are today. Near term, though, we need to launch that new lead gen site that should launch this week. We've got a soft launch actually already going today. So I won't mention where it is now, but because it's not quite ready, but it's that close. And then we need to get that thing running with, you know, Google Ads. Google, as I mentioned last time, won't turn on the flood or won't turn on the faucet like at full blast right away until they trust your site. So that's kind of a slow process. We've got to iterate and adjust and watch things carefully, make sure that this new shiny new site isn't counterintuitively worse than the old one. It's funny because having done a bunch of A/B tests in the past, it's often the ugly, tackiest looking thing that for whatever reason converts people, you know. So sometimes you can make it look nice and shoot yourself in the foot. So we've got to watch for that. And then we'll start working on a client portal where they can log in and start dialing in some of the knobs and things that they know about. For example, what keywords do we use in their specific location to attract the right types of sellers and that kind of stuff. They can, they should be able to control that kind of on their own without having to go through us. So we'll work on that. I'll report back. But between now and next episode, I should have that site launched. We'll have some Google Ads turned on and I'll report back on how that's going.
Nice. So how do you measure the success? I mean, obviously you have some sort of analytics that say, well, mm-hmm. we've had so many visitors in so many weeks and a certain percentage of those went further down the funnel and filled in the form and said, contact me or whatever that is. Is there any live A/B testing so the users will get randomly redirected to a previous version and the new version? Or do you have enough data on the old version to know how the new version compares? And then I guess the other question that I have is there any proactive user testing? So like your business partner has existing relationships that you guys could tap into and say, hey, we changed the site. This is how it looks like now. What do you think of it as from the viewpoint of the customer looking at mm-hmm. this and previously being involved with us? Does this make sense?
Yeah, the old lead gen site has been around for years. And so there's a lot of data around number of ad impressions, number of clicks, number of leads, conversions, all that kind of stuff. There's three different ways you can submit a lead on the site. There's the good old-fashioned web form, the old-fashioned way. There's a chat widget. If you chat in there, the conversation gets recorded and sent to the investor that's responsible for that area, because each of our clients has a specific geography that they care about. Somebody that's buying houses in California won't care about, you know, Vermont, for example. Yeah, so, yeah. So there's web forms, there's chat, and there's an 800 phone number, which is dynamically swapped out depending on where you are visiting the site from. If I'm visiting from California, it will give me a California number that will go to the California agent directly. And so we have all that data for years. Now we have a brand new client, coincidentally, luckily, that is starting right now, right when we're launching the new site. And so he's aware that we're going to work with him on this new site that should ideally, we believe, actually provide more leads and more qualified leads and all that kind of stuff. And he knows it's going to be a slower ramp up. So that timing worked out really well. So not an A/B test in the sense that visitors for one geography will be sent to either A or B. It's more like we'll leave the clients that we've got already set up alone. And then we'll benchmark the new client against those old ones, because even though the geographies are different, there's all kinds of different variables, they tend to average about the same click-through rates, same ad impression rates, and all that kind of stuff. It's in the US, which is where we operate right now only. In the future, it might be other places, but in the US, real estate's pretty, you know, popular across the whole country. So although it might be more popular in California versus Montana, it still gives us the percentages and ratios and stuff like that that we need. So short answer to your question is, it's not a classic case of an A/B test, but we're able to do enough comparison to where we can see that this is either working or not and adjust before we bring over all the other clients. The ultimate goal is to get everybody on this new site, but we're going to have to do that slowly because it's like two moving trains. You know, we've got a train going at 100 miles an hour, and we've got to pull this other one up alongside it and have all the customers hop over. So that'll be a process that'll probably last at least another couple of months. And we'll just have to watch that really carefully.
And then hopefully they don't fall out the train when they make the jump.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. Yeah, we'll see. We'll have to be careful because, you know, these clients of ours, and I don't blame them one bit, are spending a decent amount of money on marketing. And if we screw something up and they end up spending thousands of dollars in a month that gets them nothing, well, if I were them, I'd be tempted to go somewhere else too. So I'm literally playing with fire. Well, not literally, but I'm playing with fire, literally playing with the livelihood of the company, I guess is a better way of putting that.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like the nice thing is that the nice thing about high touch sales is that you have very, human relationships with your customers. So I think there's an opportunity for transparency there even if you do mess one or two things up while you're experimenting, it sounds like the kind of relationships that you have with the customers is you can be open with them and say, like, we both have the same goals and we messed this one thing up here, but you know, we're fixing it and we're making it better, as opposed to something that's completely non-human, that they just bought a subscription, they paid us like massive amount of money for it, and then it got lost somewhere in the pipe. So I think it's actually failing could work in your favor by the sounds of it.
Possibly. It's actually even better than that, because we have weekly calls with each of our clients right now. We solicit feedback. We ask them about the quality of the leads so that we can adjust our AdWords campaigns and things like that. So we have a really close relationship with them, and that's a good point. I mean, we should be able to adjust as we go and not screw up too bad, knock on wood, you know, as we launch this new thing. So I will report back on that.
That sounds great. Well, I think, practically for me, the next 2 weeks are going to be building on that mini feature. So next time we talk, hopefully I can have a nice release to talk about. you know, these last little bits of reporting on total values are kind of like the last vestige of the basic functionality. And then, like we were talking a couple of episodes before on, you know, what is the value proposition? I think you really need to, for me, to do marketing with confidence, is I need to understand that. And in my head, it's always been more around healthy conversations with your employers, you know, between freelancers and customers. And technically speaking, from a product point of view, it's not quite there yet. So, I mean, remote time doesn't report on hours per task, for example, because I don't like micromanaging and I don't think freelancers do either. But there's a lot more kind of like in the immediate backlog that is more directly speaking to having healthy conversations. So yeah, that's kind of like where the marketing sprint's going to come in, is like which the prioritization and understanding what distribution channels and how to communicate that kind of message. And I guess I'm hoping over time that becomes a little bit more clear, both as the features develop and as the communication increases. Because I think that's, listening to you talk about customer interactions, is I kind of feel almost at the cusp now, and it's a little bit depressing because I'm not there yet. But you just need a handful of real customers. You don't need 10, 20, 30. And I think Arvid Carl was talking about this in his most recent newsletter and podcast episode, is you don't necessarily have to have hundreds or thousands of people in your audience. You just need 5 or 10. And if you can land 5 or 10, mentally, that's a lot easier to get over than what you're seeing all these successful products are doing. So I'm kind of like that strategizing towards the end of November, because I mentioned December, I'm going to take a break and just switch products for a while on, you know, what is the strategy to get 5 customers and then have real conversations with them and see how the product roadmap looks after that.
And man, unless you already have a huge audience, those first 5 to 10 are so hard to get. Man,
for sure.
It's really, people underestimate that. At least I do, or did, and still do.
Yeah, and I think the sad thing is with you know, if you're indie hacking part-time, it takes a long time to develop the product. So if you don't have that kind of, you've been through that experience 2 or 3 times with products that you've built before and gotten, say, fairly late to realizing you actually need to talk to people, that whole cycle can take a long time. So if anybody's listening and you're doing product for the first time, please talk to people sooner rather than later. Even if you haven't got something physical, start having conversations now, because I think that's the big, you know, I think this is my second time around I'm trying to build a product. The first one didn't, you know, the actual product didn't actually get out the door. So at least I got that right this time around. But now kind of crossing disciplines into, you know, audience building and talking to people is like, that's the big lesson this time around. It's like, you really should have been doing that from day one.
Yeah, and everyone thinks that their product is special and that they won't need to do it exactly like everyone else, and people will just love it and all that. And boy,
yeah, I think that's the trouble. We look at these products like you know, for example, Basecamp. That's a lot of Jason Fried's communication on, like, we didn't do any proactive marketing, and you know, that's a lot of the communication. But if you just look a little bit under the skin, Jason's actually a very, very good marketing guy, salesman. So the way he puts out messages, and he can say, like, technically they didn't take out any ad spend in the beginning, but the way that he was engaging with his audience, and that was very definitely marketing. So as engineers, we like the idea of the fact that we can just build a product and put it out there and people will find it, and slowly but surely we'll get traction. I think the reality of it is you have to cross the discipline of knowing how to speak to an audience, and you know, things like copy and knowing how to write in a clear and concise way is super important, and that takes practice. Yeah. You know, any author will tell you that they start out and their writing is terrible, and the only way they get better is just by doing more of it.
Yeah, same with talking to people verbally. You know, like you're saying, get out and talk to people. Just do, if for no other reason, do it for practice. You know, and as far as Basecamp goes, if you look way back at the beginning, the reason they were able to even jumpstart Basecamp is because they were super embedded in the design community that they were part of. It wasn't like they just started from nothing. They were involved with this design community, and they said, hey, we built this thing for people like us. And yeah, that's what really kickstarted it. But if you don't know any better, then you think, oh, they just built this cool thing and everybody showed up, you know, so spot on. Okay. Well, I've got my dad joke ready. Awesome. What about you?
Give it to me.
Okay. No guarantees here, but, what I want to know is, it's more of a joke, I guess, but it's the type of joke that, you know, somebody that likes dad jokes would tell. So how do you fix a pumpkin? With a pumpkin patch. Nice and corny. I saw this on, I saw it on Reddit. So I can't take credit for it. But the original author was a 5-year-old, according to them. So that sounds like
that's amazing.
Pretty impressive joke for a 5-year-old. Well, I thought it was funny. I laughed out loud, so I thought I'd share.
Yeah, full transparency. We don't make up any of these jokes. So we can't take credit for any of them. For sure, all of mine, I've just Googled and thought that sounds pretty good. You know, there's so much. I mean, we know we have listeners like tuning in, and maybe some of them is like, that's the only reason why they tune in, is they've got to figure out like what the good dad joke of the week is. So there's a lot of pressure, you know. So I was looking around trying to find some jokes, and I thought, well, I've got to switch things up a little bit. Normally it's very geeky themed. So I try to find a joke on something boring like carpentry, but I couldn't find any that would work.
Oh boy. You're such a good storyteller too. You know, you don't even realize that you just got slapped in the face with the pun until it happens. I knew it was coming, but as soon as it happened, that's funny. All right. Well, it's another good chatting with you and hearing about your updates, and looking forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, Sam, Brian, and we're getting slowly but surely, we're getting better at our timekeeping. So one day we will get to our half an hour target.
Yep. At least we're under an hour this time. A little bit more of a drive to and from work if you're doing that. All right. Well, we'll talk to you later. See ya.
Cheers. If you enjoyed this episode and you want an easy way to support us, we'd love it if you reviewed this podcast on whichever platform you're using to tune in. If you'd like to ask a question, you can send us an email to hello@indiedads.com or message us directly on Twitter. You can also find us at indiedads.com, where you can see show notes, links to our Twitter profiles, and product websites. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.